This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
All right. Hello and welcome to Paranormal Pets. My name is Brandi Stark, and today we are doing a little bit of catch up with what's been going on with my paranormal pugs. And then we are going to talk with local author Deb Carson about her paranormal pet experiences. And we'll get started with that right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And welcome back. Well, as you all might have caught on that last podcast, there is a new addition to the Stark Clan Pug Grumble. I have caved, I have weakened, and I don't know how to deal with this, but I now have a little black pug boy who is named Telemann. I guess I had an acquaintance from a local Tampa Bay Pug Club meetup group, and he had posted that he and his husband had taken their pugs to visit Reader, which was in Hyde Park. And I thought, New York, that makes sense, right? Well, it turns out, so I commented because they had pictures of the newest litter that had a little black pug boy. And his little cute face right there on my screen, I was like, oh, thank God you're out of the area because he is adorable. Well, because the person who had the litter was on the Facebook chain, I'm still with Facebook. I'm old. I know. It's fine. Lo and behold, she replied. And I'm like, uh-oh. And it turns out she's only an hour away. So that's even better. So that got to be very interesting. And ultimately, oh gosh, it was awful. I think I debated for a full week before deciding what to do. I even put it up on Facebook. I'm like, people talk me out of this because I'm thinking about getting a black pug puppy. I have a thing for black pugs. And my very first pug was a black pug that I inherited from my grandmother named Odie. And the thing is that I had grown up with pugs, but they were always mom's pugs. They were my siblings, but Odie was mine, my first pug child. When she passed away, I got my first pug boy, a little black boy named Odyssey. And so initially I had been looking for a black female. We couldn't find any in the Tri-County area down here. So I ended up with a fawn female that we named Iliad because I was so determined to use the O-D from Odie, O-D-I-E, to create a name. And so I was a classics major. I was moving into my degrees. That's how long ago this was. And so we actually visited a woman by the name of Patricia Parks. And she was one that we had rescued a pug from. She had a litter and the whole litter passed away except for one. And that one had eye birth defects. So we were visiting with her and she was like, well, I know somebody. And so we went with her and we visited this other litter and they had the most adorable female and she was the last one there. And so mom's like, I'll get Iliad, who was a fawn. So that started my whole lineage of fawn pugs named after the Iliad and characters within. And then we found a little black boy. And so that was Odyssey. So that was many, 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 many years ago. And now here we are. And I'm down to Telemachus. I had Odyssey, Odysseus. We've got Calypso. I did rescue one black pug whose name was Amazing Grace, but I didn't name her. And now we have little Telemachus, who is currently chewing on the hem of my garment as I talk. So it's been kind of an interesting little journey lately. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. ultimately, this gets to be kind of interesting because, of course, it is a very mixed pug group. And I was very concerned because he would be the only puppy in a whole series of adults. So we really did work really, really hard to save. But part of the other factor here is, of course, my mother. So starting a year ago, she started getting really, really anemic. It does turn out that, again, she ended up with a form of stomach cancer, which luckily it's aggressive, but it doesn't spread quickly. So she has been on chemotherapy. The chemotherapy, unfortunately, triggered her dementia, which made it worse. So she's on chemo light, and we're going to kind of see where she has been contained. It shrunk some, but there's a lot of stress with this. And it sounds very strange, but my mother is the one from whom I got the pug love. But as she's gotten older, she has stopped replacing her pugs, obviously. And right now, in the past 3 years, I think we've lost three pugs because she did pug rescue and adopted the elders. And in fact, we just lost one last month, her last rescue adoption, who even know how old she was, but somewhere between 15, 16, somewhere in there, 17 maybe. She was pretty old. So my mother still has two pugs, but, and I know this sounds strange, maybe it's a supernatural element in me, but, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I keep thinking, what happens if she ever gets down to no pugs? You know, is that a terrible, terrible thought? She actually does pug sit for me. I'm very pleased to say I have limited hours that I feel cognizant, particularly now that she's off the hardcore chemo. She's got enough wits around her that she can pug sit for me. And the little one has brought her a great amount of joy. And in fact, right before this podcast, he runs up to her and he wants up. And, you know, he does that little kid thing where he wants up. And she was saying, come on, honey, baby, of course. You know, so it's really, really sweet to see. He, however, is turning into, he's getting longer. His paws are getting bigger. I've heard adult barks than yips, even though he's only, probably 16 weeks. He's about 4 months. It's weird to watch them like mutate as they grow. Oh, okay. Now he's decided to roll over onto his back and he's playing with a little tiny, he's found a stick. I'm okay with him chewing on a stick. Earlier, he was trying to chew on an electric cord and my mother's antiques. Not good. But he's kind of really lightened up the household. He is now everybody's bratty. And so it's insane. It's crazy. And I know it was crazy. I do wonder if he has some sensitivity. I won't know for a while. I mean, he's still kind of developing, but there have been a couple of other little incidences that have happened that I thought I would highlight. One is that I had taken Achilles. That was a slip. Sorry about that. I had taken Neoptolemus to my art studio. And if you're not aware, my art studio is haunted. The pugs, but really protective spirits who probably were there when the building was still a department store. So believe it or not, it was a department store for like 70 years. And this was during the time from the 1920s until the 90s, where you would have like a lifetime career there. So we think there's a few folks there that were really attached to that store period. And it's been really weird because I did tell my studio folk that my end goal is still to have a paranormal museum. We had a plan about 5 years ago. So, you know, I'm kind of going, I have been looking, I've been actively looking for my own location for about 2 years now here in St. Pete. And as soon as I mentioned that, it was at kind of this meeting, this group meeting. As soon as I said that, the door, the conference room slammed shut by itself. And I was like, oh, thanks, ghosties, but I'm going to miss you too. I have had a few more rather odd incidences that have been happening, which include I have these bright candles because, of course, I need ambiance, but we're not allowed to have fire there. So, okay. And there have been multiple times. I've even had people in the studio with me at this time where I reach to go turn on one of the flashlights and it works, or flashlights, it, candles, and it works like a flashlight where you twist the lid and it turns on before I touch it. Like I will be reaching for it and it'll turn on. And I had a Neo there in July and I realized candles, and we had been there about 2.5 hours and it was a very quiet art walk. The elevator has also been down. So there's all of this stuff going on and, you know, we're the second floor. And so it was very light art walk. Summer in Florida, nobody's here, ironically. And then you had to get pugs to walk up two flights of stairs to see you. So Neo had, you know, it was good for him. He's still a little high strung. He's one of the more high strung pugs that I have. So it's nice and slow. And as I reached out to handle, you know, I'm like, hey, ambiance is ambiance. It's still time. You know, I'd been there too. It's about 7:30 at night. So 2.5 hours. The candle turned on by itself again. And I'm like, okay. And so I was like, okay, you're playing a prank on me, because there is one that is kind of a jokester, and he'll do little pranks like that. I thought, okay, I know you're here. And then I went to sit down, and Neoptolemus, who had been sitting with me all night, all of a sudden he looked at the area where the candle is. It's in the back right corner of my studio, barked like crazy. And then he kind of followed and actually ran up to that section and kept barking and barking and barking like there was somebody there. And I'm thinking, okay. And after about a minute, he completely stopped. So he came back up, he sat next to me, and he was fine. But it was really very odd timing that it was all around the time period that this candle lit up. I have also been purchasing items in preparation for this paranormal museum here in St. Petersburg. Currently, we do have a bid in on a 1939 building, but it is one that needs a lot of repair, and I don't know what's going to happen. Apparently, these people who bought it were going to develop it, and they did not get the land print that they needed. And so, ultimately, it was going to be demolished, and then for some reason, it wasn't. So, I don't know quite what's going on, but then they wanted to sell the building, and I think they've had 3 or 4 deals that have gone and collapsed. So, I don't know if this is going to happen. I'm really hoping it is. We think that the building might be haunted, and it's part of a corridor that is up and coming in St. Petersburg. So I'd be getting in before the real estate prices get so super high that I can't afford them, because they are. The median price for mixed-use property here is $1.1 million. And this little building is in the 300,000s. So I have put it up to the universe. I have been hoping for the 888 portal that, you know, these folks will be like, all right, you know what, we're just going to do this. But I don't know yet. However, I have been utilizing the pugs because I've been getting haunted dolls. And one of these days, we'll do a podcast on haunted dolls and pugs. I only get the positive ones. I was very skeptical when I first started this, and now I am considerably less skeptical. There's a whole haunted doll underground as well, if you don't know that. So far, the pugs have shown absolutely no fear of any of the haunted items I have brought in. I do now have a brand new hearse. She's actually not that new. She's a 2006 white Miller Meteor Cadillac hearse. I had to get rid of the red hearse. He was a 98, and he was just becoming such a money pit. I hadn't even gotten him up and running before he was breaking again. So this is a 2006. Again, very used, but something that wasn't going to break the bank, because new Cadillac hearses are like $65,000, and this was not $65,000, I'm happy to say. So I actually do have a portable paranormal museum in that hearse. So I do have a casket, some of the haunted dolls. We actually have a tombstone from Buttercup and a couple of other items here and there. And the pugs have been in that hearse. They don't seem to show any. The first pug I had in there was Neoptolemus, who discovered that the partition was open and promptly jumped from the passenger seat through the partition into the back of the hearse to run around. So, I mean, there is just so much going on, but the pugs are still part of that testing process. And it has actually been pretty interesting. I did do one doll test, and this doll was very active. And we'll kind of go into that on another episode. But ultimately, I had put the doll out into the back room before they go into the hearse. And not like 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, the entire group of pugs goes out and starts barking in that room. Now, they are crazy. Granted, they will find weird things to bark at. And there goes my shoe. Okay, the puppy has my shoe. So there we go. But the timing, once again, is very, very interesting. So we're still testing out the whole paranormal pet thing. We're trying to do so gently and very carefully, this process with my mother, and seeing where she stands and how the pugs are dealing with her. She is their Grammy, and several of them have very special things that they do with her, like they sit on her lap in a special way, or they sit with her. And so, you know, and now we have the puppy, and there's just all the stuff, guys. So much stuff. I may have to do my whole episode on my own one of these days. But the paranormal pug pack, we'll kind of see where it goes before we take our break. If you go to Tampa Bay Creative Loafing, my pug Rumble is up for best dog. It's under best people category, best dog. Now, we all know that pugs are not dogs. They are small, slightly misshapen humans, but I did not find a category that said, you know, best pug or best small misshapen human. So I had to enter them under dog, but I figured that since people meet them throughout walks and they have for 8 years now, they deserve to be nominated. And I am hoping that they win or at least become finalists. Creative Loafing, you don't get any money or anything. It's all about the honor. But if you get a chance and you would like to vote for them, please do. It will be under group and it is the Stark Clan Pug Grumble. And we'll see what happens. But I think they are deserving. All of their little names are listed up there. All right. So we're going to pause so I can get my shoe back. At least he's not chewing on. And when we get back, we are going to have our special guest, Deb Carson, who is a local author, who's going to tell us about her paranormal pet experiences. All right. We'll be right back.
Now, time for something really scary. A word from our sponsors. Paranormal pets will reappear before you can say Bigfoot. Don't run away.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Shearer.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Moore.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails. And who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown. Pet Life Radio, the tail wagger.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Did you hear that? Our commercials have mysteriously disappeared. Paranormal Pets is back with our haunted host, our ghost host,
Brandy Stark.
Okay, and welcome back. We have a special guest with us today. Her name is Deb Carson, and this was really cool because since this is the Paranormal Pets podcast, we are both authors. So there is an event here in St. Petersburg called the Underground Book Fair that is put on by Tiffany Rosano. And she started these a few years ago, and they include our local Jack Kerouac house. If you're not aware, Jack Kerouac is considered the father of the Beat Generation, whose book On the Road took off in the 1950s. And I've actually taught it. I think I've talked about it on and off in this broadcast because he was one of my first ghost interactions. His ghost is supposed to haunt a now closed bookstore called Haslam's. And we got to investigate it. And he showed up as a mist image on one of my film. I was using film at that point in time. On one of my film images. So every time they had a book fair, because it's the Jack Kerouac house, he moved here in 64, his house in a place called Plaza, and or Distin, yeah, it is Distin Plaza. He actually moved up to Massachusetts. He took a year to go to Paris, but he eventually brought wife number three, whose name was Stella, and his mother, who had had a stroke, and they were caretaking for her to this house. And of course, Jack Kerouac dies. They moved back to the house full time in 68. He dies in 69 on October 21st, interestingly enough. And so I had heard for years, and having met at this bookstore, I had wondered for a very long time about the Jack Kerouac house here in St. Pete. It was bought by a couple who use it as a bed and breakfast and a nonprofit to continue the legacy of Jack Kerouac. It's a time capsule. The house was in litigation for like 30 years. It was contested and locked up because his third wife's family had been somehow given the will. It's crazy. If you want to read about it, Petersburg and Paranormal Pinellas, Volume 2. And in fact, that is currently wrapped up and hopefully getting published now. But there was a lot of stuff that happened. But literally, the house has like his furniture. And we were set up in his wife's bedroom, Stella's bedroom, when Deb Carson came through. And it was a very hectic day. It was my birthday, which was kind of cool. And it was really fun because it was just such high energy. But at some point, we were talking books. And so Deb mentioned, not only was she an author, but when we talked about the paranormal, she mentioned that she had some paranormal interactions with her pets. So the first thing I would like her to do now that she's in here and we've gotten you caught up on that backstory, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. And Randy, we have crossed paths even before that. And by way of a little bit of introduction,
you may
or may not remember that my last part of my first career, which was about a 30-year career in marketing, I was at the Palladium. I was the director of marketing there. So I know we share that background.
That's right.
St. Petersburg College, you're on faculty there. I was at the Palladium for about 10 plus years. And so I know we crossed paths there. I know you had
the
tour through the Palladium, which was very much filled with energy. I don't know what's going to happen now that they've closed for a year and what's going to happen with all
closed
of the...
temporarily.
Yeah. Closed temporary. Well, at least, you know, live people will be in there refurbishing. I don't know what the past people will be doing in there. And there are quite a few of them in there, as you well know from your
heart.
I know from working there. But
yeah.
I've been in marketing for about 30 years. My second career started upon the end of my first career when COVID sort of decided it was going to close down everything that had to do with, you know, the schools and the theaters and everything. There was no one to book, no one to do the booking. There were no artists that were traveling anymore. And so the Palladium was closed, SSPC was closed for a very long time. And there wasn't much to market anymore. So COVID kind of took my job at that point. And I pivoted to my second career as sort of a writer and something of a little bit of performer, which is hearkening back to my original first love, which is arts and music and culture. I started out many years ago as a voice major and somehow morphed into the marketing and later the writing. So yes, so I went back at an advanced age to get my master's degree. at USF St. Pete in Florida Studies. And I did it in marketing and arts communication and management. My thesis.
Oh, wow.
Before my thesis, while I was there, I had taken a course called The History of Florida Through Film. And a final project for that was to do one of the things we could do was a film treatment. So I always had the story that my book eventually became and was published. It started out in the seed of a film treatment for this class in grad school. As I was moving toward my thesis, there was a number of things that I was thinking about, and my beloved friend and mentor, Gary Mormino at the USF St. Pete, he's co-chair of the Florida Studies program, said, "Deb, just go ahead and write your book. I know you're a good writer. You can do this." So I actually wrote the book for my thesis. And then I wasn't sure whether I wanted to turn it into a screenwriting piece, a dramatic piece. I had all sorts of ideas. And then I thought, well, let me just get this story down for a mainstream audience. And lo and behold, I wrote it. My editors, the wonderful Nanette Weiser, she is a creative co-collaborator of mine. And so we published the book. I published the book under my own publishing imprint, if you will, called Pure Art Press. I published it first in 2021, and I sold it myself, and I did pretty well. But I wanted to eventually make it more widely available because people from all over the world were interested in buying the book, and I was going to have to charge much more to be able to cover my cost and have a little bit of a profit. And I said, let me just go ahead and put it out on online booksellers and whatnot. So the book is called Becoming Flow, A Mostly True Story. And it is a mostly true story. And it is available on really any online bookseller. And you can go to any brick and mortar store and you will be able to have them order it up for you. It's available now in its third printing from all of those places, as well as an ebook version. And just recently, in the past few months, I had the idea to put some of my original background in training and performance and radio theater and all of those kinds of things to good use. And I voiced an audiobook and released it a few months ago. And so that is now available all through Amazon and Apple Music, I believe. But if anybody's out there who wants a chance to listen and score a free download of that, they can email me at debcarsonwrites@gmail.com, and I will send you your own unique promo code. You can download the audiobook for free immediately and listen to it. And all I would ask, because Audible asks me to ask this, and I do so humbly, is to just, if the spirit moves you, here we go. That's a good segue, right? If the spirit moves you, I and Audible would appreciate, wherever you post it, your review of that, because that helps to sort of spread the gospel of the story, if you will, and have people learn more about it. And it is, in a nutshell, here's what the book is about. Everybody's probably like, what the hell is she talking about? What's the book about? The book is about, it takes place at the start of, actually it starts in the late 1800s in Russia, where my great grandparents were escaping the pogroms in the area around what is now Ukraine and Moldova. They came to this country. They had 9 children and they settled in Baltimore. They were escaping religious persecution, of course, at the time, and they came to this country and landed in Baltimore, which is where I'm from. Their fourth-born son was a very effeminate boy, and my great-grandfather was a very homophobic and a very mean-spirited man, and he could not abide by his son, his fourth-born son, being so effeminate. And so there was a lot of really murderous physical abuse, and his son, who is my great uncle, who I knew as my great uncle, finally decided in order to live, he was going to have to run away from home. Well, here is a 16-year-old Orthodox Jewish boy from Baltimore who ran away from everything that he knew and loved at age 16 in 1920. And as it turned out, like, not unlike most Orthodox Jewish boys at the time, he ran away and joined the circus. Now, originally, he joined the first circus, which was a small traveling circus in the 1920s. But by 1949, he actually had worked his way up to becoming invited by Ringling Brothers. And he wound up during that time, he began living his authentic life out in the open as a woman. And that's how he wanted to be remembered. That's how he was in his circus family, but not in his biological family. So he died in 1974. And it wasn't 40 years later that I started researching the thesis that I found out, because I was interviewing colleagues that were still alive, friends of his that I actually remember from being a kid and going to Ringling Brothers rehearsals in Sarasota when we were little. They were the ones who told me the rest of the story, which we never knew. We never knew that he always lived his authentic life in his circus family as a woman. His clowning, he was a celebrity clown with Ringling Brothers during its heyday. In its infamous Clown Alley, he worked with Lou Jacobs and all of the very famous clowns of the time. I'm trying to remember that. I'm spacing it. Just the name of the clown who always did the hobo looking. Emmett Kelly. He was friend of Emmett Kelly, Luke Jacobs, Otto Griebling, all of the. He was in that group in the circus elite in the 1950s and 60s. He passed away in 74. And in 2010, when I began researching the thesis, I knew most all of the story, but I did not know he thought of himself as a woman, not just in costume, although his costumes were decidedly feminine from that point on, but that's how he lived his own life as a woman within his circus family. But we only found that out when I began to research the thesis. So it's a really interesting story. I sometimes don't even like telling people that I am related to this person, although he was the person that I knew and loved in life as my Uncle Albert. But it is a story that I wanted to ride for a long time because, number one, for two reasons, I wanted to honor the person that I knew as my great uncle, and I wanted to authentic Flo as the person she lived her life as, and honored that. In addition, I also wanted to, number two, be able to show that for people who are similarly struggling, young people, old people, middle people, kids, whatever, for kids that are similarly struggling with a story like that, there can be paths out that will be lit from the darkness. And arts and culture was his path out. And it still is a powerful source of light out of the dark for so many people. So that's why, you know, my cousin and I used to kid that I had the Uncle Albert gene. So here it is. I'm turning the spotlight on him and thanking him for what he gave me during life and in death as well.
Excellent. Well, and of course, the local connection with Ringling Brothers is Sarasota, where there's the Ringling Mansion, the Cutaway, and of course, the winter folk, winter season or the off season, a lot of times they would settle in Gibsonton. So there's kind of that connection here as well, which is really interesting. It even showed up on an X-Files episode, as I recall,
yes,
in the 90s. And
yes, I do remember
it was kind
that.
Of the infamous, the Lobster Boy murder that happened here. So it's really very, very interesting. And of course, some of that folklore does sink down to a certain extent as well with something like the Minnie Lights story, believe it or not, with a witch woman named Minnie who had either two children or two acolytes, I don't know, who had dwarfism, who were little people. And so kind of interesting to have that tie. And I have tried to research this idea because the whole thing that happens is the Minnie would be protected to small people who would chase people off property whenever they came to threaten her. And then the neighborhood rallies and burns down the house and everybody dies, but you can still summon their ghosts. It's called the Minnie Light story. So you can still summon their ghosts by calling out Minnie Lights. But it's interesting because that is a story that we definitely find in this area, but it's a unique story as well. And I have been trying to look for other stories that deal with little people. Could find is this urban legend in Tennessee about a train accident where these two folks broke out and they were like miniature wild men and they kind of became these feral creatures living in the forest. So it's truly an intriguing element to tie into this area, you know, kind of the idea of the outsider, but also the outsider finding acceptance, right, through entertainment.
Yes, absolutely.
And through finding others of their kind. Yeah, it's really
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. And circus and carnival and for the longest, I mean, all of those places have, you know, folklore, very rich folklore about their history, not just in this country, but, you know, all over the world.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and of course, it makes sense because, again, they are a group of essentially folks that are outside the norm. So a lot of that's going to get attached pretty quickly. But because it's Paranormal Pets, we get to hear pet-themed stories. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what happened?
Sure. Well, my husband and I, and even, I mean, just growing up as a kid, neither one of us individually or collectively have ever been without pets. It just, a home is not complete for us unless there are pets. And in our situation, there have been over the years, typically multiples of pets that have been our only children that we've ever had for years and years. When we lost our last little girl, T, who I'm going to talk about in just a moment, that left a huge, huge hole. And we have not lived with pets in this plane anyway, since she passed a couple of summers ago. And we miss her like crazy. And I still have her photograph on my phone. But I mean, we have had many, 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 many pets that have just been, you know, each and every one have their own story with us. But the last little girl, T, I will tell you, this was a, what we call in Yiddish, a beshert story, or the same translation would be kismet. It was meant to be for sure. She was we at that point in time, we had lost almost all of our animals up until that point. This is over a course of years, and they all lived to ripe old ages, to anywhere between 15 and 19. Well, the last doggy that we had lost, Bear, we had rescued a little tuxedo kitty whose name was Coltrane, and we called her a special needs kitty because she had all sorts of illnesses. But she was a great kitty. She was skinny. She could never gain weight. She had vestibular disease, so she walked in a crescent. She didn't walk straight. She walked in a crescent.
Oh.
And so I was at PetSmart one afternoon after work, and I was dressed up for some reason. I have no idea, but I had on a navy blue, really nice suit. It was a day that I had some meetings, and I was really missing our little doggy that had just passed. And I was at the PetSmart. I was getting the food after work to get her. It was the only food that she could eat, was a particular food that they had there. So I'm at Thursday night PetSmart, and I'm pathetic because I always look around for animals to play with because I'm so missing my dog and our other cats. And I spy this little orange fluff ball on the end of a 6-foot leash with this woman. The woman has on a gray, like a running suit with pink piping. And the little dog has on a little coat that looked exactly like that. It was a gray running suit with pink piping on it. Okay. And they're both just happy, happy, happy. And I'm like, mental note, go get Coltrane special needs kitty food. And then her name was Coltrane. That's right. Her name was Coltrane. My husband named her, knowing she was a female. And he had changed it once we found that Coltrane was from Miles Davis. So you go figure it out. But anyway, I was getting
it's fine.
Coltrane's food. And I spy this little orange fluff. And I say to the woman, I find her because I want to play with this little orange fluff ball. And I'm rolling around on the ground in my navy blue suit. I could care less what I look like. I'm having such a good time. The lady says, I say, your dog is precious. She's just the most adorable dog I've ever seen. She was a little oversized Pomeranian, I'll call her. And she really was the cutest dog I had ever seen. And we had some cute dogs. She was really something. So the lady says to me, I'm looking for a good home for her. I just got her out of the shelter. She was there with a lot of big dogs, and she was looking at me like, what am I doing here? And so I couldn't leave her there, and I adopted her, but I can't have a dog. I'm looking for a really good home. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not a coincidence. This is the universe saying, this is your dog. It's been a year. This is your dog. So it took a lot.
That's right.
And it was a coordinated effort between the person, I call her baby mama, Linda, who said she was looking for a good home. We finally coordinated. And about a month later, T came home to live with us. I mean, we took her everywhere. She was my little muse as I was writing the book. I would literally have her sitting, laying, going to sleep on her little blanket next to my computer as I was writing. So if ever you guys get to read the story of my great uncle and her name being Flo, becoming Flo, you will see in the acknowledgments that I acknowledge T because she was my little muse. So sadly, a couple of years ago, she passed away. She had congestive heart failure, and she lived until she chose, this is not good anymore. I'm done, mommy and daddy, and it's time for me to go. And we said, yes, this is the last gift of love that we can give to you. And we did, to end her suffering. Well, that was about 2 years ago. I can't tell you how often she visits. And what she mostly does, she did in life, when I'm downstairs in the kitchen and I'm cooking, I will hear her come up behind me like she usually did. And won't say anything, won't make any noise, but I will hear her little feet padding on the kitchen floor. And I can just feel her looking down, looking up at me as I look down at her like, well, what are you making? Is there something there for me? I would like some too. Or she'll hear cellophane. And in life, she could be dead asleep somewhere in a different part of the house. She would hear cellophane. And she would come running. And so today, if I'm in the kitchen and I'm opening cellophane, there are a lot of times when I will hear I will hear her coming. I can just feel her being there. A lot of times we'll be in the other end of the room. It's an open concept floor on our second floor. So my husband and I will be in the kitchen, in the living room, and we will hear something going on in the kitchen, and we'll both look at one another and we'll go, when we would sometimes call her monkey, monkey, what are you doing in there? What are you doing in there? There's nothing in there. Go back to sleep. So we talk to her every once in a while too. And there's a little Siamese kitty that we had, a little paddlefoot Siamese, who was also a rescued kitty from outside in downtown Baltimore. We took her with us to Florida. She sometimes will come around and I'll just sense her presence. And she's just sort of, she was always a little nosy girl. And then she comes around and she's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's this? What's this? So they don't all come around often. Every once in a while, they're in my dreams a lot, but T and Binky, the little paddlefoot Siamese, they were the most curious and mischievous of all of them, I think. And that's part of what keeps them coming around. So yeah, I sure do feel them.
Oh, that is awesome. And like I said, it sometimes sounds a little unusual. And I know that you sent us a picture that we're going to use as our thumbnail. So if folks would like to see.
I sent them all in order of how we had rescued them. But the last picture, it should be the last picture. You can easily identify her because T was a dog who, I've never had a dog in life who loved dressing up so much. And when we got her from the lady who rescued her from the animal services, the county animal services shelter, she, she had bought her for some reason, just all of these cute little outfits. So of course we got them when she came to us, and I thought, oh geez, this dog was meant to play dress up. It was the most bizarre thing. So the picture that I sent you was in one of her two favorite outfits, and it's an outfit where she's got on a Wonder Woman cape. It fit her literally. Her name was T, and it fit her to a T. She was quite the little Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's fantastic. And as I said, part of the reason why I try to collect these stories.
And of course, it was so important for me to send you all of the pictures of all of the fur babies. I forgot to send you a picture of the book. I will do that as soon as we finish our interview, so you have that as well.
Oh, that's perfect. Anyway, part of collect these stories, and I've gotten folks and feedback from people over the years that it's so important to them because it gives them hope for their own animals, because the West is catching up to this whole idea of afterlife for animals, but we're not all the way there yet. It's just kind of neat to see how, those connections span not only this reality, but multiple realities. Mm-hmm. So I really, really appreciate sharing yours with us. And what we're going to do is, once again, how can people get in contact with you? And then I'll wrap up the episode and we'll get this going.
I would love to hear from anyone out there, and you can connect with me two ways. I have a website, which is called debcarsonwrites.com, debcarsonwrites.com, debcarsonwrites.com. That's my website. And you can email me at a similar email address as debcarsonwrites@gmail.com.
Excellent. And for those of you who are in the St. Pete, Greater Tampa Bay area, coming down the pike, we did relaunch our ghost tours for the Spirits of St. Petersburg. We have the stpetersboo.com website up and running. We do walking tours. We also have the Summerween tour that we are booking privately, but weekend. And we will be doing Spookazar October 4th. So that'll be its third year. And stay tuned for information on the Jack Kerouac House, because we did stay overnight and we did do an investigation there. We have just added in a couple of brand new investigations, including, of all places, Rocket Fizz in downtown St. Pete, and also the Velvet Mat, which is in the Crest Building. building, which is a very old, old building from 1928. We investigated Saturday night, so about 2 days ago. And hopefully there'll be some new information, more information to come. But I want to thank you all for tuning in, for being part of Paranormal Pets. If you guys want to catch up with the Spirits of St. Pete, you can also find us at spiritsofstpete.com. And until next time, happy haunting.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week, we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets every week only on PetLifeRadio.com.